Hey everyone, welcome back to the Performance Marketing Minds podcast brought to you by Outbrain Direct Response. I'm your host, Joe Adana, and today I have someone that I've done a lot of business with over the years, Kyle Dana, the Director of Digital Strategy and Growth at Digistore 24. In this episode, we'll discuss the evolution of affiliate marketing, particularly in the health sector, and the changing landscape of VSLs. We'll also talk about the decline of traditional email affiliates, the rise of influencers, and the integration of AI and performance marketing. Additionally, we're going to highlight the importance of optimizing backends, adapting to new market trends, networking and events, and exploring all the micro niches in the affiliate marketing world. So, without further ado, let's jump into my chat with Kyle Dana. Enjoy the episode. You've been traveling all over the place, huh? All types of speaking engagements, all types of beach vacations, and I don't know, you're all over the place, huh?
Yeah, I don't know so much about beach vacations, although I just booked my first real vacation in November, which I'm pumped for. But yeah, traveling a lot, was in Brazil twice in a 30-day period, which was awesome. And every year I say I'm going to travel less, and somehow I end up still traveling at least once a month. But yeah, events are great, obviously, for the business, and then just personal, being able to see, you know, places like Brazil. It's awesome.
Yeah. So what's going on in Brazil? Because I know like Digi has increased their presence there pretty substantially over the last couple of years, right? At least with Portuguese speakers and going down there for events and stuff. And even us, we have an office in Brazil. We have a bunch of different affiliate clients from Brazil and performance marketers. So, I mean, we definitely see the potential in it. And they're not even necessarily running offers in Brazil. They're just super smart, scrappy buyers that are buying in the United States or Europe and all this stuff. So why do you think it's blowing up down there, and what's actually going on?
Yeah, so Brazil is crazy right now. It's called the Brazilian wave. It's been like that for a couple of years, and for sure it's a big wave that isn't coming down anytime soon. I feel like it was kind of like how Romania was several years back now, where there was a couple really big guys that a lot of the other guys worked under or kind of learned from. And so in Brazil, there's a couple really big vendors. I think they call themselves producers in Brazil, but basically offer owners, product owners. And they have huge masterminds where they teach people, you know, how to have success with, you know, these different kind of neutral offers and stuff like that. And so, yeah, there's a couple guys right now that are probably the biggest in the industry. And then all these other Brazilians are learning from them through masterminds and things like that. So I think that's kind of how it popped off. And then, of course, Brazilians see other Brazilians having a ton of success. They want to get into this world. Of course, it's not that easy to make money in Brazil. And so if these guys can do it and get paid in US, especially, there's you know, a big attraction to that. And so, yeah, for sure, Brazil, it's on fire right now.
Yeah. I mean, are they making the products in Brazil too, or are they really just getting fulfillment from the US, creating the brand story, and then being able to send it from anywhere in the world? Or is it even more local to Brazil, like things actually getting produced there too?
No, yeah, they're using all the big US fulfillment houses, like the Ship Offers, the Eagle Labs and whatnot. And they're predominantly right now selling in the US, so not really selling in LATAM, but selling in the US. Now we're seeing that some of them are also trying to go into Germany, which is obviously a big reason why a lot of people use Digistores. We can help go into more profitable markets. And so, you know, obviously the US side of things has become a lot more difficult for a few reasons. And so a lot of people are now, yeah, looking at markets like Germany. Even some of these Brazilians, all right, they have a winning offer in the US, it kills it. Eventually it dies down because, you know, there's a certain shelf life to any offer. And now they're saying, oh, well, wow, Germany is kind of an untouched market, hasn't seen VSL as much, traffic is way cheaper. All right, let me try that as well. But yeah, they are mostly selling in the US and not really in Brazil or like any local regions.
Yeah, that's smart. I mean, I think that if I was a Brazilian or living in a different country and, you know, and how everything's so digital now, being able to just take it wherever you want, I think I would be smart enough to do that, but maybe not. So kudos to them. We jump by a lot of it, but you've been in the performance space for 15 years, right? And the reason I wanted to talk to you is I'm just so curious about being an actual marketer, like a marketing manager in the affiliate space, and not a media buyer, not an offer owner, but someone that works at one of the top networks in the world. And like you said, traveling a bunch, trying to get the name out there, not just for the network, but also understanding and helping people maybe where they should put their money and what they should do. I mean, talk to me a little bit about how you got into, I guess, the performance marketing world, but becoming like choosing the marketing path instead of the affiliate manager or affiliate or email affiliate. Like, why did you go that route?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, it's kind of a interesting story of how I got into direct response. So I worked in all kinds of industries before getting into direct response. I worked in light bulbs to adult entertainment to sports betting and online casinos and stuff. So just before getting into this space, I was working for the biggest online gaming company in North America, casinos, sports betting, stuff like that. And yeah, without going into details, I was dating a girl that I was the manager of. That didn't work out. And also, like, these like online gaming companies were doing billions of dollars, but they didn't really pay their employees super well. So I was like, all right, I want a change. I also want to work somewhere where, you know, my ex-girlfriend isn't. And so I had a referral. My old roommate at the time was working in this space, and the owner of his company also owned an email agency called Advertise Health, and they're like, they're looking to kind of change things up, shake things up, have kind of new energy and stuff like that. And so I got into the space initially through email, and the email that I knew was very different than direct response email, where, you know, it's text-based, the CTAs are hyperlinked text and stuff like that. That's how I initially got into this space, but my background was always like being head of content or marketing manager or whatnot. And then Digistore was obviously making waves in the US several years ago. And essentially, so many people that were working at Digistore previously worked at, let's say, ClickBank or other agencies that were my account managers when I was an affiliate doing email. And so I already knew 10 plus people at Digistore. For me, it was exciting. Like, at the time, an underdog who, you know, was on the come up. And yeah, I had really a vast marketing background. So even though, you know, working in like email and doing sales, there was a lot of money in it. My love is truly, yeah, marketing. And so it was kind of cool to stay in the space, but kind of apply that marketing, you know, background and knowledge to see how can I help Digistore grow and succeed, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I want to go back to the email stuff, but how has the world of health VSLs and just health offers evolved over the last couple years? Because I feel like 3 years ago, or even, you know, 10 years ago, when it was more of like anything goes, and the amount of crazy VSLs that I've seen in my time, and you've probably seen 10 times more than me, but like, how, like, what's different now, and what are people planning for over the next 3 years to continue to make money? Because it just seems like the real aggressive scare tactics and FOMO tactics, like, they're still out there, right? But there's been so many waves through health offers in general, from like subscription-based free sample stuff, and then the long VSLs. And now it's like people are starting to go more quality in the Shopify space. But what has changed the most? And I guess, what do you see the most successful people doing right now to prepare for the next couple of years?
Yeah, so I think, yeah, there's several part answer to that question. For sure, you know, conversions are down. I think consumer trust in general is quite low right now. Of course, the economy and the election, macro things like that hasn't helped. But I think, you know, one thing is traffic costs are so high, product costs are so high. So for sure, the vendors that are winning right now have their backend super optimized and dialed in. And before, I feel like backend was just email marketing, where now there's email, there's SMS, there's phone sales, there's abandons, there's new things like ringless voicemail. So I think the vendors that are really winning right now have that backend dialed in, also have super high AOVs, but basically AOV and LTV focus, so that they can pay more to acquire a customer, whether it's paying a big CPA to attract, you know, top affiliates, or pay more on paid media. So I think that's the biggest thing I'm seeing right now, is having backend really, really dialed in. I think, like I touched on before, is looking at other profitable markets. So looking at translating their offers and going into, like, let's say the German market, the French market, Italian market, where these markets haven't really seen VSLs like they have seen in, you know, US, where it's super saturated, where the traffic costs are 50% less. So definitely seeing that. In terms of VSLs themselves, I'm seeing people are testing shorter form VSLs, so calling them kind of mini VSLs. So I think there's two reasons for that. Is, of course, like things like TikTok or Instagram Reels, people are used to these shorter videos where there's that short-term gratification. And at the same time, I think the older population is, let's say, becoming smarter. So what, like a 7-year-old 30 years ago versus a 7-year-old now, I think is quite different. Like, you know, my dad's in his 70s. I can't picture him watching a 45-minute VSL, right? He's like sending me Instagram Reels and stuff. So I think, yeah, vendors are playing around with different style VSLs, shorter VSLs, trying to customize kind of the VSL. So maybe at some point there's a question where it then directs them to, you know, a different style VSL or, you know, a different script or something like that. So I'm definitely seeing like that user experience where people are testing, customizing that buyer journey, so to speak. Yeah, that's definitely a big thing. And yeah, like you said, I'm also seeing more e-com and like Amazon and stuff like that. And I think there's a couple of reasons. Is consumer trust is low, so people aren't purchasing after just seeing a VSL. They might go on Google after and search the product and prefer to buy it on Amazon. Or, you know, people are just so bombarded with messages now that they get distracted, and then they might go search for that product after. So now I'm seeing people do more SEO, which is what people used to do, and having a good e-com site or Shopify site. So seeing that, but at the same time with AI, although aggressive offers are less than it was before, I'm definitely seeing that with AI, there are some vendors doing quite aggressive marketing, and it's kind of hard for other people to compete. So I think there's more people that are trying to go compliant or trying to go that e-com route. And so I think the vendors who can dance the line of like good aggressive marketing but also being compliant is definitely a good success strategy. Because honestly, Digistore or compliance are super strict. If you're running paid media, of course compliance is super strict. So I think if you can find a way to balance that line between good marketing but also, you know, still being compliant, I think it's not easy, but if you can do that, of course you'll have a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't know if you feel this way too, but over the past couple of years, it just feels like the traditional affiliate model is just getting squeezed out because of all the vendors and the offer owners and the people that they have all the stuff to worry about, right? Like they have all the back end, they have all the upsells, they have all the content creation, and they don't want to get hit with some compliance issue either. So now they're creating most of the content, owning most of the funnels and the ads and making sure things are approved. It's happening across not just like the health and e-commerce world, but also in the search arbitrage world, like Google feeds wanting to see exactly the ad that the affiliate is running for them, right? It's becoming huge, huge, huge. So I feel like we went through this crazy phase after COVID when there was so much money in the market and people were online all the time and buying things. And then you started to see the online courses of like, here's how I'm an affiliate and here's how I make $100,000 a month promoting offers from different networks and everything. And I feel like it got very saturated very quickly. And it's, I think it's harder for a lot of these like 1 to 2 person shops to really make it like they did, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, I think the vendors right now, like the big vendors, is they're so dialed in on everything. So it's not just, hey, creating a product, a VSL, and you're going to have success. Like these guys are really like living in the data and making sure that every single thing is optimized within their business. And yeah, just to also touch base, because like you were talking about COVID and stuff like that, is I think right now where the market is, there's a bigger demand for like make money offers than health supplements. I think right now where the economy is and the state of things is people aren't so concerned with, you know, buying these expensive supplements. They need a way to make money. And so these make money offers, I think, is what's has a much bigger demand right now than health offers. And I think there's kind of like, it's like a somewhat of a cyclical pattern where we see that every few years, it's make money offers and it goes back to health. Even seeing now, like, digital offers are making a comeback, which, like, several years ago they were pretty big. Then it was mostly supplements, and now I'm seeing a lot of people are maybe selling something lower ticket, like a digital health offer, and then on the back end selling a supplement.
Where are people running most of those digital offers? You know, because on Native and obviously the Outbrain Teeds and Outbrain Direct Response team, it usually is a lot of either higher ticket things, or when it's lead gen, you know, it's lower ticket lead gen. But the digital offers, like, where is that? Email? Is that just your traditional social channels? And, like, I see them all over on YouTube and everything like that, but I guess where are you seeing all that being promoted?
Yeah, definitely social. Honestly, like, email affiliates, I think, are dying out pretty quick. I had some calls recently with some big vendors, and 90% of their affiliates were email traffic, and that's completely gone away because, like, finally, these ISPs, I think, for email have caught up and are, like, fully blocking kind of affiliate sends. So the quote-unquote, like, traditional email affiliate that you used to see several years ago that were some of the biggest affiliates now, it's definitely, I wouldn't say non-existent, but there's definitely fewer email affiliates that can actually send a lot of traffic. So yeah, I'm seeing traditional social. I'm also seeing, like, some people now are having big success with, like, TikTok Shop, which I think is also a new trend. So I think people are trying to find, like, these new channels, like TikTok Shop. I know for a while Rumble was like getting pretty big. I don't know. That might have changed, but yeah, that's like a trend I'm seeing, is like new channels, like kind of TikTok Shop, or even certain native channels that people are exploring because maybe the traffic cost is lower. But yeah, traditional social, I'd say.
Yeah. The email stuff's crazy to me. Someone was telling me a story that's been in the search arbitrage game for like 15 years. And back in the day, you used to be able to, now search arbitrage, those media buyers and affiliates are buying on something like Outbrain, TikTok, Facebook. They're even buying Google to their search feeds. It's crazy. But back in the day, they were doing it through email, and they were having like their you know, their search feed results in people's email in their inboxes. And then Google caught on and they stopped it. And it's a multi-million dollar industry of search arbitrage through email that one day they just decided, you know what, we don't need that money anymore. It's getting too risky. And we just cut it off. So I guess it's kind of like a two-pronged question from two different ways, but if you're a traditional email affiliate, or you're just, you know, an affiliate in general, knowing kind of where things are going and reading the temperature of the room and everything, like, in my mind, it's, they have to learn to get smarter and more technical and understand all of the LTV and AOV and understand tracking and understand how they can help these brands and actually be a partner more than just like a raw traffic buyer. Cause I'm still in these Telegram chats and, you know, I see posts on Facebook and it's like, I have traffic for this, who wants it? You know? And I feel like that type of thing, it could probably still go on, but I feel like how can that, I just don't feel like that's sustainable. You know, I feel like it has to be way more of a partnership. And maybe that is what makes a lot of the agencies and things a little bit more successful. Like, they think that way and talk to the brands about that and aren't just like this volume traffic producer. But I don't know if you feel similarly. It's just some, I just wonder how they elevate themselves, you know, for affiliates that are like, okay, well, what's my next step? And usually it's, well, I'm going to make my own offer and I'm going to take it in-house. I'm going to own the whole thing, which is great. But if they want to just be maybe a little bit removed and not a small business owner, then, you know, where do they go and what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're solely an email affiliate, it's pretty tough, honestly. You know, like, I used to do the duplicate list for many years, and the, like, duplicate list style of things where you're purely an affiliate helping someone monetize their data, but kind of on the side from another brand, that's where it's really hard email. I think the brands that are doing email well or back-end well is, first off, like, focusing a lot more on content. So, like, that welcome series is, like, teaching people how to use the product, talking about the ingredients, giving more social proof also so people don't refund, right? Like, reaffirming them they're making a good purchase. But then I think from there, it's a much more content focus. So, like, even email affiliates that I know now, rather than promoting an offer and, like, linking in the email, there may be, it's more content based, and then maybe it's going to a blog article where then they, you know, have a link to a product. That's kind of a trend I'm seeing if you're specifically an affiliate, versus if you're a vendor that is doing email, I recommend like also doing SMS, but having more consistency between all your offers. And what I mean by that is like having similar branding across all your offers, or using the same spokesperson or same doctor, because I think now sending affiliate offers via email is quite hard. So I recommend like sell more of your own products. You can create specific bundles or specific products specifically to sell to your email list, but have like relatability between all your offers, if that makes sense. Because let's say you're doing email, SMS. Right now, a lot of direct response marketers, every product looks like its complete own company and brand. And so it's kind of hard to kind of cross sell that. Versus if it's always the same doctor, right, people are going to understand, oh, you know, this is the doctor that I know, or this is a brand that I know, and there's going to be a higher propensity to buy. Yeah, I don't know if that kind of answers things, but I think solely doing like email affiliate marketing right now, I'm not going to lie, it's definitely a lot more challenging. And so I think, you know, whether it's content focused first, or I don't know, trying interesting delivery mechanisms, or I think also customizing and segmenting a lot more. So trying to really understand what these people are interested in, and then doing a lot more segmentation or customizing kind of flows and stuff like that is maybe something that's also working.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like the continuity thing between offers, and someone told me this the other day, it's like the longer you're in this space, the smaller it becomes, you know, because you start to know the right people, talk to people. But I can't tell you how many conversations I've had, and probably you, where it's like, oh, you own that one too, or like you own this offer as well. But it's like five health offers, but just know they're different labels and they're different things. And, you know, to me, yeah, it's never really, I mean, it's made sense maybe from like the privacy standpoint and like the things, you know, yeah, our industry wants to worry about sometimes. But yeah, the storytelling behind all of the offers, 100%. I mean, it needs to happen, you know? And it's so funny when we talk about like people snapping back to content and blog posts, which is what it was like, you know, 15 years ago. Like that's how, so I've been with Outbrain for 10 years in January, long time, but I think we're 19 years old as a company. Way back in the day, it was like the whole pitch to advertisers was content to content, you know, somebody reading an article on MSN or CNN or Fox News or whatever. And then you want them to learn more. You don't want them to drive directly to an e-com page and like buy a pair of Nike sneakers. You want to, like you said, you want to like convince them why. You want to tell the story. You want to give product testimonials. You want to like go through that whole storytelling process. And years ago when I started, the best people that did, like the most innovative people were actually PR agencies, which is crazy to say, but these public relations agencies, they would get an earned media piece for some product that they had or some review on some website, and they would promote the hell out of it. They would drive tons of money just to that earned media article that they don't even own. It was on like some third-party review website. They would start cookieing the users. They would add them to a retargeting funnel, and then they would start to remarket them the product, and the conversion rate was bananas. And to them, they were already, you know, a little bit of ahead of the curve thinking about like multi-touch attribution and how earned media works with actual product purchases and all that stuff. And they knew that they could spend $100,000, but maybe it's only $40,000 in purchases that came from something else. But like the brand awareness and the continuity behind it all was super, super impressive. And they were buying in, you know, what people call the negative, like they were in the red for months and months and months, but like holistically, it was way, way better than that, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think on like a similar point, like I'm seeing like now, like influencers are becoming big again. So vendors who were doing email affiliates as a big traffic source for them, they're now looking at influencers. And I think kind of to your point now, like a lot of people are maybe selling a low ticket offer to then be able to, you know, sell these higher things on the back end. I think you need more touch points now than you used to need to have before. So Yeah, because of that, we're seeing some like interesting trends, like going back to the way that marketing sometimes used to be done, or, you know, more content heavy and things like that.
Yeah. The influencer thing's crazy to me. It really is. Like, I understand why, and I get it. It's just the linking of the partnership. I don't know. It's all, have you heard of influencers getting like percentages of companies to take on selling their product to, or is it more so, I guess another question is like, are influencers already being proactive and going to affiliate networks or things like that? Or is it more being direct sold from the offer owner, the affiliate network approaching influencers and trying to get them to kind of partner with the product? Like, how does that whole conversation even go?
Yeah, I think it's more direct. I haven't seen it much through like Digistore. We've spoken about like what other markets can we go after, and maybe we have a campaign going after influencers that maybe don't know about, you know, affiliate marketing. But yeah, I think it's mostly direct vendors are searching out influencers. I've used influencers in the past on other businesses. I had a bit of success with, you know, the more micro influencers. In terms of the macro ones, I personally haven't had a ton of success there. But yeah, it's mostly direct. But yeah, I'm curious to see how it's going to go versus like, you know, working with an email affiliate, it's pretty easy. You know, they have a list of people that are going to want to buy that product. You have a specific tracking link. It's much more easier model than influencers. But I think now people are just, you know, trying anything to capture that traffic back.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you like a radical idea or thought. So I was in the car when I was back in California, and my in-laws listened to this radio program with this woman, Dr. Laura, who's just like this therapist on the radio. And she just tells it like it is, like super harsh. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Or, you know, she's like, not mean, just a direct therapist on the radio, just on the FM radio. And she goes to break and she reads an ad, and it's one of our top spending health supplements that she reads an ad for.
Oh, wow.
It's about women's hair growth. And here's this like radio personality who's probably 75, who knows how old, but she is, you know, doing influencer marketing, but like an affiliate, you know, using the code. And I could tell because it's an affiliate offer. It's like an offer that she's promoting that I know of. And I was like mind blown to be like, wow, this is where things are getting penetrated. I don't really hear too, like that was like a one-off thing. Like I listened to Philly Sports Talk and, you know, there's local plumbing ads and local car dealerships and all that kind of stuff. But I think that where podcast ads really blew up, like when I used to be in California and I was buddies with the people that ran the Manscaped podcasting arm. And they would always tell me, you would be so surprised at the return on ad spend that we get from a podcast ad. It's like, there's nothing like it. It's the easiest channel, yada, yada, yada. But I'm like really interested in the radio sector. I don't know why. I think that there's a huge untapped potential in radio and just like daytime radio.
Yeah, it's interesting. And honestly, like I don't know if it's a guilty pleasure, but I'm a big sports guy. So I listen to like the Montreal radio station all the time. And like, sometimes I'll be like, you know, singing the ads around the house because like, it's just, I just hear like the same ads every day and I just know them off by heart at this point. And honestly, like there's times where like I hear about, I don't know, a new pizza restaurant or something. And I'm like, oh damn, that sounds interesting. So it would work if they were selling me, you know, maybe a interesting supplement or interesting product that, you know, isn't necessarily my local market. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. Again, it goes back to that trend of like, sometimes we're now going back to like older marketing strategies that are kind of, you know, proven and not like a fad or a trend, I guess.
Yeah. Like, it got so hot for a while. I think it's snapping back too a little bit personally. And I'm here for it. Like, I think one of the things that we've kind of done too in our network is reel things in with the amount of people that are actually allowed to run ads on the network right now, just because it got a little bit too, you know, top heavy. It's not top heavy, but like too many people coming in with the same offer, or, you know, just it got, it's like so many people were in there. So right now we're not even allowing people to sign up for a DIY account themselves. Like, they can't go sign up for an Outbrain account and run ads. They have to go through somebody like me or someone from our team, or to be able to get on the platform. And with that happening, you see a lot more of the more quality people come in, the more people that are more committed to the platform, storytelling, really want to learn about it than just like the fly-by-night quick hitters. So I think that's the way I see our role going too. And then also a lot of the bigger brands start to kind of maybe go the opposite way a little bit and tap more into the kind of performance marketer direct response mindset. Like I saw a landing page from Sunkist, the I think it's orange juice and lemonade, you know. I saw like a landing page from them and it was total DR. It was like the craziest thing I've seen. It looked like a e-com product, you know. So I think they're finally catching on a little bit too late, but I think it's going to help them, you know. I think they need to make money too, which is nuts. And then you couple that with all the, I won't go into like specific numbers, but you can imagine the, like, there's a lot of page view decline on publishers right now too, you know, like just traditional media, whether it's people's trust in media, whether it's, you know, people getting news from different sources like podcasts and YouTube and X and Twitter and all that, right? Like a lot of the traditional publishers are fighting to keep audiences on their website too. So you couple all that in together and yeah, things are harder. For sure.
100%. And yeah, it's always weird for me to see like big brands that are doing DR tactics. Like I think I bought like a white t-shirt from Gap, and then I started getting upsells of like a food subscription company and like random things like that. So yeah, it's always funny to see these big brands who are, yeah, trying to figure out like what can they do, and direct response is something that's kind of new to them, that, you know, what can they do to get a higher AOV, or like they're even promoting products as an affiliate technically with these upsells, which is, yeah, it's strange.
It's wild. So what are you most excited about over the next 12 months? Like you go, I'm assuming you're going to Affiliate Summit East. I'll be there too. This podcast is going to air after that. So all good, but we're there. We meet a bunch of people. What do you think the conversation is on the ground? What are you most excited about? Like, how do you see this next 12 months going in our world?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I'm for sure excited for New York, excited for Budapest. I'm seeing for sure in like New York, a lot of the email people that used to be there every year aren't going anymore. And there's a lot less people that are going. Yeah, let me think about that. It sounds all doom and gloom where I'm like, damn, like, is there anything I'm excited about over the next 12 months? I mean, I am excited for sure to see like, you know, more creative, innovative strategies for people to sell outside of the traditional VSL. So I've been seeing some trends, like I said, of like mini VSLs and things like that. So I'm curious to see where that goes for sure. Personally, I've become pretty obsessed on my free time about SMS. So I'm curious to see how that trend goes. I think some people are doing some really cool things with SMS and like things like ringless voicemail, where you can leave people a voicemail, but it doesn't actually, you know, call them. So I'm seeing some kind of cool backend strategies like that. So I'm pretty excited to see where that goes and if there's new technologies or new strategies like that or new tools that kind of come into the market. I mean, I think those are the big two things. Again, I'm seeing on Digistore people go into other markets, so I'm curious to see, are there going to be new markets that people target? Like there was German market, UK, France, Italy, but maybe there's other like really interesting markets in the world that people haven't even thought of, where like these people have a desire to purchase online and whatnot. But yeah, it's honestly a good question. I guess it's a bit depressing that
it's a good question for me too. Like, I don't even know the answer to. I feel like my answer is on the AI side, but just not like, you know, blowing smoke up the AI train. But I really want to see if the ad creation is going to be more seamless and if it's going to look more real. Because for someone like you and me and people in our world, I see these AI videos and it's on, whether it's TikTok, which I'm not on, by the way, but I see the clips on LinkedIn and all that. It just all looks so janky and fake. And I was having this conversation on LinkedIn with somebody, and it's like, maybe people are just like welcoming it because they're so over the like personal influencer hype train. And maybe they know it's a fake AI person and they're there for it and they listen to it. I don't know. Like, I'm just really curious if that continues the right way and continues to get better. Not that you're trying to, like, you know, dupe people out and make them think it's something it's not, but I'm curious at how good it actually gets. And then also on the voice side of AI, like, from what I've seen and what I've heard is people are, for like health insurance or Medicare or things like that, where there's an AI agent that's almost like qualifying people and talking about health history and conditions. There's all these studies out there that people are more willing to open up when they know it's an AI agent rather than talking to you or me or a real person, because they know it's just not real. So like, then how does that fold into helping people, businesses cutting costs down? Like, where does that whole thing go? I think I'm really interested in that too.
Yeah, AI for sure. Yeah, is a good answer. I think it's part exciting, part scary. But for sure, I mean, I probably use AI 1% of what I could be using it for. Yeah, something that's pretty cool is for an internal project where we're testing AI phone sales. So of course, phone sales is really big in the industry, and we're testing where we feed it all the information about, you know, the product, the upsells, things like that. And then the AI is actually, yeah, selling upsells to the customers. And I've listened to a few recordings and, yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's having a back and forth conversation with the person, understanding what's their pain points, what issues do they have, recommending upsells. And of course, it's a bit different than traditional phone sales, where in this case, you have to send them a link via email or SMS to go purchase the upsells. But yeah, I was like, damn, that's pretty crazy that like an AI can actually like be upselling, like not just customer service, but actually selling like, you know, a $500 product. So yeah, that's definitely something that is very, very interesting. And yeah, I mean, even for myself, I'm like realizing like I can probably make my days way more productive and, you know, way more efficient using AIs. And so I have some friends who are playing around with building AI agents, AI bots and stuff like that. And like, they have a whole team of AI now who's like, you know, handling everything for their media buying efforts. So yeah, it's scary, but it's definitely exciting.
Yeah. I'm a noob with that stuff too. I think the coolest thing that I can end on too in that world before we wrap up is this whole, I don't know if you've heard of it, like the MCP server to serve, like different AI agents talking to different platforms. So being able to have your AI tap into your Meta API, your Outbrain API, your TikTok one, and literally just shift budgets, pause things, add in new creatives, fold in best performing ones from one platform to the other, like automatically. And I think that's where I see the real power, you know, super affiliates, you want to call them, or agencies. Like, that's the whole joke of, yeah, I'm sitting on the beach with a Mai Tai and I'm making $50,000 a day or whatever, you know, and this is what affiliate marketing is. I think that, like, if we get to that reality where the agents are plugged in and can start doing it themselves, and the buying, like the traditional media buyer, is then more strategic and going back to creatives and storytelling and that type of thing, I think that's how people win. I think, like, learning how to make that useful and automating things and then, you know, kicking back and doing the fun stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's cool. And I guess, yeah, one last answer that comes to mind is just, I've been seeing a trend of like some new, let's say, niches or micro niches. So it was always, you know, weight loss, blood sugar, men's health. Now I'm seeing like telehealth is absolutely huge. I'm seeing people like really have micro niches as opposed to weight loss, a very specific, let's say, use case or buyer persona or mechanism. Like, I saw like one guy, he's killing it with blood sugar, but he sells specifically to like Latinas. Like, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And like, he's doing 500 sales a day. So yeah, I'm curious to see, like, you know, whether it's the product itself or kind of who people are targeting, like what kind of interesting strategies or trends we'll see there.
If you guys listen to this whole podcast and you take one thing from it, it's blood sugar offers to the Latina people. Oh, man. Well, thanks, dude. I appreciate you popping on. Any last words of wisdom?
No, I mean, I guess given Affiliate Summit East is you know, coming up in just a few days. I definitely, if there's people that still shy away from events, I'd say go to events. Events will be a complete game changer, regardless of what your business is. I think creating relationships and doing business in person is, you know, will 10x your business, like, honestly, overnight. So I think that would be my biggest recommendation to anyone listening now. I know we didn't speak about events too much, but since that's coming up, like, events has been a game changer for me personally. It's been a game changer for Digistore. So I'm sure, you know, you guys, events have been big. So I definitely recommend, if you're not going to events right now, start. Don't be shy. People in the industry are usually pretty approachable and, you know, friendly. So yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
Events are the best. I'm going to, you know, pile on and just say events are like, everyone's selling something, right? Whether you're selling to try and get an introduction to somebody, you're trying to learn more about something, like, instead of just popping into somebody's inbox or LinkedIn DMs or anything like that, like, actually going and meeting people in person or catching up with people that you already know and you want to talk to, just to refine a relationship. Like, there is all the business gets done at events. I would say probably, like, we go to events maybe 20 days out of the year. I would say 50% of all business gets done within those 20 days, you know, of, like, linking up the right partnerships, knowing the right people, making sure you're in the right spot, like, people gut checking you in person and not being afraid to talk about things because, you know, you're just talking over a beer or a coffee or something. Like, yeah, if you're one of those people that kind of shies away from it, just go putz around, say hi to some people, and have a good time. I agree.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Well, thank you for popping on. I really appreciate you.